I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date, whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
I'd walk every step of the mile and think it was really worthwhile to see a parade come marching down the line. I don't know a son of a gun who wouldn't be willing to run to see a parade come marching down the line. Perhaps I'm what you'd call a patriot, but one thing's certain, whether I am or not, I love a parade. The tramping of feet, I love every beat I hear of a drum. I love a parade. When I hear a band, I just want to stand and cheer as they come. That rat-a-tat-tat.
Uh-huh. Any idea why I picked that, John Nichols from the Cabin Times, as we start out? On a fine podcast.
I got an idea. I think that they have those big parades in Moscow, right?
North Korea?
In fairness, France. Donald Trump, being the internationalist that he is, being the worldly guy that he is, wants us to be a little like other countries.
Is he going to bring us May Day?
The wrong May. Well, I don't know if he brings us the right May Day. I'm okay. International Workers' Holiday. I like Labor Day. Good with that. But why not another?
He wanted a military parade for his inaugural, right? And they told him they couldn't do it.
They disabused him.
Right. But now they're open to setting a date. But this would literally cost, $1 billion, for God's sake.
I don't know if it's a billion. I mean, really? I don't know.
They've got to ship that equipment they've got to ship tanks up from Georgia. And not to mention, poor D.C. streets are going to get shredded.
Drive those tanks right up the freeway there, man. But that's a parade in itself. But, if it's a billion, Sly, or a billion five, I want to say, I am going to volunteer as a consultant.
Oh. Are you a parade consultant?
Surely. I've been to a lot of them. I'm going to do it. I'm going to volunteer to do it for a personal fee.
Really?
$10 million. I'll put
okay.
it together.
Okay. Yeah. And why?
It's not like there's not a lot of military in the D.C. area. I think I could have them drive over.
I can't really figure out why Donald Trump, this is like the one thing that holds his attention. Evidently, he was just so enamored with that parade in France that he actually held his attention
for hours, perhaps, or at least minutes. Well, he also had a lot to say about the president's wife.
well, I understand.
He was telling the president of France, "Yeah, your wife looks good for her age," or something. Some incredibly Jeffersonian moment in our history. Look, here's the thing about military parades. Okay. We've had military parades in America.
Uh-huh.
You know when they have occurred?
Yes, when Donald Trump won the war on Christmas.
That one I don't know about, but we did have them. Like when we won World War II.
Uh-huh.
We had a parade.
Uh-huh.
Pretty good parade.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a few of them, as I understand.
Mm-hmm.
My friend Clarence Kalin, the old lefty from Madison.
Mm-hmm. Passed away.
What?
He passed away not long ago.
Not that long ago. He fought in Spain. Went fight against fascism before they said it was okay. But he remembers as a little boy growing up on the south side of Madison in like 1919 when the troops coming back from World War I marched through town. So, this has happened, and it's quite acceptable. It's quite good. But the concept of an American military parade in those times, one of the great historic notions of it was that our citizen soldiers came home from their battles into which they had volunteered and been drafted, and they went home to their small businesses and factories and farms, because America did not maintain a huge standing army. We weren't like the, you know, the monarchies of Europe, the dictatorships of many countries around the world. We didn't feel we had to show all of our military might because our military might was our people.
Yeah, that was then. This is now.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. A little nostalgic.
The rule book has been ripped up.
I believe the term "sly" is out the window.
Out the window. Okay. Well, on that fine note.
By the way, hey, before we leave it, did you see Tammy Duckworth's quote? Senator Tammy Duckworth's quote?
She said she may have found that as a way to work in his deferments.
I will quote it for you if you like.
Yes, I would.
So this is Illinois Senator Tammy Duckworth on Trump's treason. It was actually a slightly different topic, but somewhat related. It's on his talk about treason if you don't stand up for him, right? And as you understand, Tammy Duckworth, because of the really incredible injuries that she suffered as in the military during the Iraq War, cannot stand, at least not easily. She can, but it's a great challenge because of lost limbs. She wrote, "We don't live in a dictatorship or a monarchy. I swore an oath in the military and the Senate to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution, not to mindlessly cater to the whims of cadet bone spurs."
Nice. Well said.
I thought she got it there.
Well said. She's about to be the first woman senator to give birth while in office.
She is. I mean, she's got, you know, look, I'll tell you, at the end of the day, somebody's going to pause and say, okay, this is the documentary, right? The woman who was a hero in war, then came back and actually questioned the war, got elected to the House, got elected to the Senate, as a young woman, you know, somebody coming out, young enough to have a kid while in the Senate. Pretty remarkable.
Here is something that is also remarkable, but for the wrong reasons.
And you have the other side, even on positive news, really positive news, like that, they were like death. And un-American. Un-American. Somebody said treasonous. I mean, yeah, I guess why not? You know, can we call that treason? Why not?
There's actually a longer version of it. I want to play it because he actually went a little further.
I really didn't even want to look too much during the speech over to that side because honestly, it was bad energy. No, it was bad energy. You're up there. You've got half the room going totally crazy, wild. They loved everything. They want to do something great for our country. And you have the other side, even on positive news, really positive news like that, they were like death and un-American, un-American.
Pretty remarkable for a guy who's being investigated for colluding with the Russians to swing an election.
Maybe you're focusing on the wrong thing there, Sly.
Oh, I don't think so.
Bad energy? What is it? Like, have you been in California recently? I mean, that's a very, yeah, I don't want any bad energy around me.
Right.
Keep the bad energy away from me. I've got my crystal tells me this isn't right. You know, does he bring good luck charms and put them around the podium when he gives the speech?
Well, why would they have to clap for him when he was clapping for himself?
Well, that's true. He filled in the gap. And then maybe they were just prescient, right? Maybe they thought they would look like fools if they applauded for the high stock market right before it had a 1,000-point, 1,500-point correction.
Well, the timing of this was, even Fox News broke away from his speech to report the stock market plunge. We'll get to that in a minute.
No, but what I'm saying is, there might, and I didn't say it jokingly, I think there were some Democrats in the crowd who were listening to some of these things that he was talking about as his good news, and they might have been thinking, you know, sounds good right in this moment, but I'm not sure that we're on the right trajectory.
Well, of course, the stock market isn't the economy.
No, it's not.
And when I read stories about one of the reasons people are getting skittish on Wall Street is wages are starting to go up.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And small businesses are making a little more money. Uh-huh. Farms are getting a little more. You know, uh-huh. Like, Yeah, I know. But you know what, Sly? This is the bad part.
Was there a good part?
No.
Okay.
But there's a worse part, if you're interested.
I am.
The stock market isn't the economy. That's true. Unfortunately, the people who control the economy, if there's a moment where the economy starts to be getting a little good for everybody, they get scared. They bring the stock market down, not as some sort of conspiracy, but they just start pulling money out and stuff like that. And at that point, then the Federal Reserve and other people are like, ooh, stock market's going down, it's getting shaky. And then they don't make decisions that might help wages go up even more.
Mm.
So the end result is there's a reason why the Federal Reserve, which has control of so much money, has as part of its charter, as part of its responsibilities, to, you know, think about work and wages. That, you know, historically the concept was that you made your decisions with an eye toward making sure that a lot of Americans are working and that they're getting paid pretty well. It wasn't some sort of socialist thing. It was, you know, just some basic economics. But what's happened in recent decades is that when the stock market goes down, that is clearly one of the indicators that the people at the Fed, and this is true during the Obama years as well, that they say, oh, I guess we probably shouldn't, you know, tighten up the money here, right? And we shouldn't take the steps that might, you know, kind of let the economy start to work on its own rather than us, you know, because that's what the Fed did. It kept interest rates so low, so unimaginably low, that, you know, people wouldn't just save all their money, right? Now, they were wrong. Actually, people did save their money so they could invest it in China. But now that there actually is some sort of, you know, restoration of a relatively robust economy in the U.S., these stock market corrections, you're right, they're not the economy, but they are things that can end up affecting the economy in a bad way for working people.
Donald Trump has been sort of hanging his hat on this.
I
mean, he's been, right? So let's.
Isn't that ironic? You're doing music. You should have Alanis Morissette.
Yeah, here we go.
Our stock market has picked up since the election.
We're doing fantastically. The stock market hit another all-time high.
The stock market is at an all-time high and continues to go up, up, up.
We did, in fact, break 25,000, very substantially break it, very easily. So I guess our new number is 30,000.
Had the other side gotten in, the market would have gone down 50% from where it was. 50% from where it was. Remember that.
You're seeing what's happening with the stock market. People are appreciating what we're doing.
The stock market is smashing one record after another.
Of course, most presidents don't go out on a limb because they understand it's a roller coaster.
Well, but Donald Trump, he's like this really super smart businessman, Sly. So he knows stuff.
He went to the Wharton School of Business.
Wharton's, but you got to pronounce it right, Sly.
Wharton.
Yeah, you'd say it differently. But be that as it may, you know, it isn't just that he went out on the limb and talked about this all the time. If you went back during the 2016 campaign, and even since then, if you go to his rallies, and you ask people why they're for him, you know, because it's not, Hillary Clinton was not right. They weren't all deplorables, right? In fact, there's a lot of people that backed Donald Trump because they were scared, because they were freaked out, because they were reacting in the wrong way to things. There were deplorable folks in that mix, no doubt about it. But there were also a lot of folks who were just unsettled. So you'd go to these people, right? And I talked to a lot of folks who were Trump backers. I said, why are you backing this guy? Because, you know, I mean, racist, sexist, xenophobic. I mean, you just run the line on it. And they would say, you know, some variation of, oh, I don't think he really means that. And, you know, he's a billionaire. He's a very successful businessman. And that's why I bring this, tell this little story, is that it isn't just that he's, like, marveling at the stock market being up. He's supposed to be. He sold himself as a candidate as somebody who kind of knew how to do this stuff. And so when the stock market goes into a correction, and remember, it's going to go down. It'll come back up. But now we've introduced volatility there. And that's why I say that the day that it went down so far was a very serious day for his presidency, maybe the worst day. Not the worst day ultimately, but the worst day up to this point, because suddenly his default, his backstop, was weakened, and that being always going to the market to say how things were going.
We got to take a break. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
When you hire a lawyer to help you with your personal injury, you want to know that you'll have that lawyer's personal attention. With John and I, that's exactly what you'll get. With many firms, the lawyer that you see in the ad is not the lawyer who is going to be representing you in the case.
One of the differences with Mike and my practice is that when you hire us, you'll have us personally involved in your case.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
Welcome back to SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like Madison Computer Works and S&R Remodeling. John, I want to talk a little bit about what's going on in Wisconsin. It appears as though, as a matter of fact, I don't even want to say it appears as though, Scott Walker has been asleep at the switch. When it comes to the Fox Valley, he has campaigned up there over the years quite a bit, spent a lot of time up there, but over the last year, they've lost almost 50% of their jobs in the paper industry. This is an iconic industry that was really some of the beginnings of the paper industry in America, and he has, you know, we have sports teams named after, you know, paper making in communities up there, and yet he's been asleep at the switch. This story is from Channel 2 WBAY, the ABC affiliate in Green Bay and the Fox Cities.
Which could cost taxpayers.
We would have to pass
it. In a bill being drafted right now by Senator Roger Roth, Kimberly-Clark would be offered the same tax break that lured Foxconn to Wisconsin. That's a 17% tax credit for job retention should the company keep its Fox Crossing and Neenah plant running.
When we brought Foxconn in here, it was all about transforming our manufacturing base. What we're doing with Kimberly-Clark, this is a company that's been in our area for a century. They revolutionized the industry. I believe that they will be the anchor. It's pivotal to having them here.
Unlike Foxconn's $3 billion tax break for 13,000 potential jobs, this deal with Kimberly-Clark is expected to cost between $3 and $10 million a year. And the 17% credit would apply to jobs that pay between $30,000 and $100,000. Democrats have a different idea. They're proposing a papermakers fund to help stabilize the industry and address job losses at plants beyond just Kimberly-Clark.
The closing of these mills and the resulting loss of jobs is especially troubling. Paper industry jobs are some of the best in Wisconsin.
$30 million would help pay for the conversion of paper-making machinery from white paper to meet the current demand for brown paper packaging. The other $30 million would fund upgrades to current mills, helping to make them more energy efficient. The governor says he, too, supports taking action.
We're not going to just give out money unless we have some guarantees whether it be the paper-making industry or anybody else, that that's going to lead to retaining and growing jobs in the state.
The bill Senator Roth is drafting should be finalized next week, and he says he has been in contact with Kimberly-Clark. Reporting in the Fox Valley Newsroom, Jason Zimmerman, Action 2 News.
I know you're going to pick up on what the governor said, aren't you, John?
Guarantees? Well, at least he's noticed there's a paper industry. That in itself is progress, right? Here's the bottom line on Scott Walker. Scott Walker's scared out of his wits. He's so scared, he's not calling special elections for vacant seats in the legislature, even though we're going to have special sessions in the legislature. The legislature's got to schedule up until June. He's going to leave places unrepresented. And
including the Fox Valley.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. There's like tens of thousands of people in the Fox Valley that Walker's leaving unrepresented. So that terror of the people of Wisconsin has focused his attention. And he knows full well that he is rendered vulnerable in this election year by the reality of Donald Trump. There's a lot of people just going to vote against Republicans. That's true. He's never had to face that before. He always ran with Obama in the White House when he's running for governor. He also faces the reality of a scorching anger across his state as regards Foxconn. And that anger is not rooted in an opposition to the government stepping in to do things. There are, sincere fiscal conservatives, like what Scott Walker said he used to be, who don't want the government going out and do this. They really believe in the market. You know, that'd be like a Ron Johnson vision, right? But then there are also, you know, there are folks who and I think it's probably most Wisconsinites, who think, yeah, if we've got a major industry that's in trouble, let's try and save it. Let's try and keep it there the way Tommy Thompson did with auto and things like that. The problem is that Walker's approach to this, which is just giving huge amounts of money to these corporations, right, with commitments to keep work or to create work in the case of Foxconn, but also the complexity of the changing era that we're in, i.e., this is an era of automation, right? And factories across this country and corporations globally are rapidly automating. And so if you want to get ahead of the paper industry and that, the better investments in this state are in the development of high-end machinery for the paper industry, not just the plants that exist, but also high-end machinery, so we can put people to work actually creating the machines of the future.
Well, you know, that's why the Democratic plan, you know, they actually consulted with the paper makers and the companies.
That's what I'm saying. That my point is that I think we can keep these jobs in the Fox Valley. I think we can also keep jobs in other parts of the state.
It's one of the few good things out of Amazon. Amazon is driving the need for brown paper.
For boxes.
Right.
Boxes
and brown wrapping paper. Yeah. There's actually a bright future. It's just a different market, but there's got to be a conversion.
And that's what I mean about machinery and equipment and stuff like that. And one of the things that we want to make sure, this is a twofold thing, and I know this is way too complicated for Scott Walker, but this is a twofold thing that we have to be concerned about. We have to be concerned about doing that conversion, and we have to also be concerned that our people are involved in developing the machinery and the technology, separate things, for that conversion, and to make sure that it isn't just all automated, right? Now, I'm not going to try and stop automation. That's we can't do that. We don't have that power to stop automation. But what we can do is make sure that Wisconsinites are trained for that next stage, and also to make sure that Wisconsinites are the best in the world, literally the best in the world, and we're up against Finland and other places on this, the best in the world at developing that machinery, installing that machinery, and I would argue, building that machinery. I would love it if the state of Wisconsin literally set up some sort of, you know, center for, you know, the future paper, right? I mean, it's an industry that literally came out of this place, and put a ton of money into that, and help companies, right? You know, worked with companies, did the whole thing. And I would love it if we were helping companies that weren't just in Wisconsin, i.e., keeping our stuff here, making us the most important place in the world on paper, but, you know, sending people from Wisconsin to be technicians other places, so that not to live there, but to go put, you know, do work on the upgrading. We can have a 21st century paper industry in Wisconsin, employing the people that are currently employed and a lot more. Unfortunately, what Scott Walker and this Roth guy, what they're doing is they're looking at an immediate crisis, and instead of saying, you know, wow, this is symptomatic of something much bigger, something that's global, let's spend some money. Let's spend some real money here, and let's buy our stability by making commitments to the future, like big-term commitments to the future. That's not what they're doing. They're just trying to throw money around at election time, and it's the same bad approach as they took with Foxconn. You should never be given a huge amount of money to a company in Taiwan that has manufacturing plants all over the world and that is on the cutting edge of all this technological change. They're not giving us their... Foxconn's not putting their best plant in Wisconsin. They're not giving us the best. We're not on the cutting edge. They're giving us a technology, the flat-screen TVs, that actually, a lot of theory that has a very short future. And so,
geez, I'll be two steps behind. I don't even have a flat screen TV yet.
Yeah, I know. You'd be like somebody gets a cell phone dropped. You'd be 10 generations ahead. But what I'm just, this is an important thing though, that instead of doing the Foxconn thing, putting, you know, all that commitment to Foxconn, if they had taken $4.5 billion in tax dollars, and they had committed it to investment in research for next stage machinery, research on the technologies related to that machinery, as well as loans, no interest loans or other, you know, vehicles, and even grants to Wisconsin-based small, medium-sized businesses, including in the paper industry, by the way, and just had it all over the state, you know, just a lot of money flowing to getting ahead of the changes that are taking place with automation. It would have been, I would have swallowed hard and complimented Governor Walker for doing exactly the right thing. But that's not what he's doing. He is actually doing economic development. This is like troglodyte economic development. I mean, it's literally like how far back generationally, historically, can you go to find?
Well, he has perfected troglodyte over the years quite well. Let me ask you about something culturally. You know, we've seen one side of Donald Trump using the term political correctness as a way to be completely insensitive and sometimes racist.
An excuse.
Yeah, here is the flip side. Justin Trudeau, the corporate liberal in Canada, Prime Minister, he was speaking someplace, and a woman was addressing him with an issue. And here's what happens.
The Prime Minister is feeling some heat for taking the concept of inclusion to a new level. At his town hall in Edmonton on Thursday, he corrected a woman who used the word mankind. Here's part of the exchange.
Maternal love is the love that's going to change the future of mankind. So we'd like you to look
We'd like to say people kind, not necessarily mankind, because it's more inclusive.
There we go, exactly. Yes, thank you.
We can all learn from each other.
Now, some people say that the Prime Minister was joking. It didn't sound like he was joking to me.
I don't care.
But
it sounded great.
What's that?
Everybody loved it. They all applauded and laughed.
Well, in the room they did. I didn't applaud. I'm watching this whole debate about pronouns and how, you know, professors are being urged not to address their students, you know, as ladies and gentlemen. This makes me very uncomfortable.
Well, it makes you uncomfortable because you're old. You're going to have to learn new ways.
Oh, I see.
You and Donald Trump. Yeah. Old guys. I don't want to learn how to say things differently.
Yeah, we're going to differ on this one.
We are.
I got to tell you, by the way, the term mankind in Old English was M-A-N-N and was not considered gender specific. By the way, O Canada, all thy son's command is getting yanked out too. Yep.
I know. I heard that.
Right.
I got no trouble with that. They even changed, you know, like I think it's now the International Union of Longshoremen and Longshorewomen.
Oh, there we go. I understand that one. But, for instance, I don't know if she's still on Wart, but there was a woman that used to be on Wart whose last name was Nelson, and she had it changed to Nell Daughter.
Hey, in Iceland, that's what they do. Iceland, they've been doing it for 1,000 years, man. If you had a kid, if his daughter would be Slidoter. Which is a real hell of a name, by the way.
Well, even they and them. I mean, it's because...
you know, Sly, with all due respect...
Uh-huh. You're making me sound like Archie Bunker.
That's no, I'm not. I'm saying, you know, look, one thing is, 99/10 of people are incredibly humane and decent. If you say something that offends them, and it legitimately does because they feel it, they understand it as such, if they're not going to go down your throat. What they're going to say is, you know, as my daughter says to me, if I say, we have an ongoing debate in our household over the use of the word Indian. My daughter says, it's got to be Native American. I say, no, I know Indians who want to use the term Indian and who have been really active in Indian rights. And you know, but I don't mind that she does that. I think it's wonderful. I love that, you know, she's interested as a 14-year-old in trying to say things the way that people want to be referred to, that people want to be understood.
I'm guessing she wasn't for Chief Wahoo remaining on the Cleveland baseball team's uniform.
But, you know, look, here's the bottom line, right? If I go into a corporate CEO, I'll give you a better story. I'll give you a Thomas Jefferson story, okay? Thomas Jefferson, I think it's safe to say, hated the British, right? So he's just relatively new in as president. And the British prime minister, I think his name was Anthony Mary or something like that, he arrives in Washington. He's going to go present himself to the president. They say, oh, yeah, I'll pick you up. You go do it this morning. So he's going over to the president's house, and he's wearing the full uniform with the badges, and he looks like Sheriff Clark, right? and he's got a sword. He's wearing a sword. So he comes in, and then Jefferson's not even around when he arrives. Jefferson comes wandering out wearing, like, slippers and what some have described as pajamas, right? And the British Prime Minister is, you know, like, in shock. He's like, this is unbelievable. Incredible breach of protocol. Jefferson goes, oh, we don't have protocol here. We have democracy. Now, Jefferson's a perfect man. I'd like to see a lot more democracy. But he's trying to teach that British guy a lesson. Well, the British guy, man, he could not, he couldn't wrap his head around that. I mean, he wrote essays on it. His wife wanted to leave Washington. It was just incredible.
And what does this have to do with Justin Trudeau?
Everything. Because sometimes we evolve as human beings. And we, you know, we put aside protocols and you know, styles of the past because we learn new things. We learn new ways to talk to each other.
Well, I know that there are a lot of people that don't want to be referred to as one specific gender anymore. I'm having a tough time adapting to this.
Yeah. You know, you'll do fine. Got great confidence in you.
Well, I'm not sure you should.
Yeah, here's the bottom line. Look, I don't mind that you wrestle with it. I don't mind that you got to put your head around it. And I respect that. I think there's a lot of people that are, you know, doing that. What I mind is the way that Donald Trump used it. And I think that's the thing we got to keep constant on. Donald Trump used to say during the campaign, we don't have time for political correctness. So there's all these problems. We can't be polite to one another. We have to.
Well, of course. And you see, that was the side I don't want to be on either.
Well, but I'm not saying you are. But what I'm saying is that he was using it as an excuse to not be polite, to not be humane, to not be decent.
Right.
We don't have time. There's bigger things in play. I actually think there is time. In fact, I think that one of the things that we've learned from the Trump presidency is we rush too fast on a lot of things. He does, for sure. And it's okay to pause for a second and figure out how we got here, how we might want to get out of here, and how we might do it together. And one of the ways to do it together is to, you know, be polite to each other.
I'll try.
I know you will.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. Thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
You know, we work hard every day. In mills and mines, hospitals and schools, in office buildings, pharmacies and shipyards, factories and forests, in squad cars, ambulances and taxicabs. We do all kinds of jobs in Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and all across the United States and Canada. We build the things that build our country. We do things that keep our country going, support our families and our communities. We have the courage to stand up even when no one else does. We have the strength to fight for what's right, for our families and for yours. We're your friends, your neighbors, your sisters and brothers. We're more than 1 million members strong. We stand in solidarity with workers in every continent on the globe. We're the United Steelworkers Union, and every day we fight for you. Please join our fight. Visit usw.org or like us at facebook.com/steelworkers.